Okay, so hello again. I know this is tough because, you know, we've all been here for what feels like 5 days, and we've got so much information and so many things swimming through our heads. So I just want to put you all at ease and, let's say, relax. I'm just going to tell you some things that maybe you know, maybe you don't know. But what I hope is that I'm opening the door for some people. Please understand that I am just going to scratch the surface very briefly on this topic, but I'm going to give you a lot of resources and things that you can do when your minds are clearer. And again, I'm not here. I have no products to sell. I'm not doing this for any reason other than to give back to Dr. Rita Marie. And I still, of course, owe her a lot more. Okay, so my name is Donna. I have a degree in chemical engineering and you're the other one, right? And it's not often that I find another female chemical engineer in the room, so. Really? Oh my gosh, wonderful. We are like multiplying, this is great. I'm so excited. So anyway, I graduated from Villanova like 100 years ago in 1981, and you know, there weren't a lot of us women then either. And I started working as a process engineer. And I hesitate to tell you where I worked, but I'm gonna do it. I worked for Monsanto. Yeah, boo. So I worked in the, I didn't work in the GMO department, but they were just developing them back then in 1981. And we were very well aware of them. And it was told to us that we were, you know, this was the way that we were going to feed the world. You know, we were going to create all these, you know, all this extra food. And, you know, it was going to be superior food. And we were going to feed the hungry. And it was such a noble thing. And, you know, who would have known what it was going to turn into now? But I do remember, you know, feeling a little like, I don't know, this sounds like, you know, playing with Mother Nature here. You know, and now, of course, we know the whole story. But I worked in a department called the benzyl phthalate department. And I got to say, if I had to pick, I think benzyl phthalates might be worse than GMOs, at least to those of us who work there. So anyway, when I stopped working for Monsanto about 10 years later, I got more into health and safety, chemical health and safety. So my job has been, for the last 33 years, to keep workers safe from the chemicals. And so what I have seen is that, and this is my mantra forever, anything can be done safely. I have seen workers work 8 hours a day in hydrogen cyanide environments. I have seen people, you know, enter tanks and vessels that have had explosive materials. And, you know, I've seen some bad things happen. I've seen a lot of bad things happen. But I've also seen more good things happen. I've seen people, we know what to do. In industry, we know how to keep ourselves safe from the chemicals. And so my thought is, why can't we all keep ourselves safe from the chemicals? Because we're not going to get rid of them. We're not all going to go move into caves and live out in the wilderness and say, okay, we're not going to have chemicals in our lives. But I think I've come as close as I can to eliminating chemicals from my life. And I'm living a lifestyle just like everybody else. I just make different choices. And those choices are safer and better for me and my family. So I want to try to give you a little insight into that. But first I want to give you kind of a comparison. You know how when you meet a doctor, a medical doctor, who has gone from standard medicine and has gone into the holistic world and has started becoming a healer, but they are an MD, and we think, you know, some people look at them and say, you know, we put them down, and their peers put them down, and, you know, try to burn their houses down and stuff, but I look at them and I say, well, they must know something. They saw something. You know, they were in that world. They were in that medical world, and they saw where it was broken. And that's how I like to think of myself. You know, I'm not trying to put down the chemical industry. Most of my friends and coworkers all work in the chemical industry. And we're all good people, and we're all trying to just do our job. But what I've seen has made me think that there's a better way, you know, and that's why it's almost like a calling that I now have to, you know, I'm not leaving my consulting business because it makes me a lot of money, but I do plan to, I'm branching out now, and I'm going to work with the community, and I'm going to do a lot more of these speeches and get this information out to people because it's really, really important based on what I've seen. Okay, so I had a wake-up call like some of these doctors do, but my wake-up call was a little different. I was putting sunscreen on my son, okay, when he was little. He's 18 now. He was going to daycare. And you know how some of these daycare centers, you know, especially the summer camp ones, they don't walk in the door without sunscreen on them. They have to smell like sunscreen or they'll send them home. Because they don't want the liability if the kid gets sunburned or whatever. So I was putting it on him, and he was crying and begging me, don't put it on my legs, Mom, because it burns. Because his legs were always all skinned up, because he's always been this little athlete, and he's always had scraped knees. And so I looked at the label, and I said, you know, something must be in here that would burn him. And I thought, I'm thinking alcohol maybe, you know. Well, there was alcohol in there, but there was propylene glycol, and there was oxybenzone, and all kinds of other cyclohexane things that these are the very chemicals that I work all day long protecting people from. I'm making people wear respirators and chemical suits and rotating them out and, you know, decreasing their exposure. And here it is, I'm rubbing it on my son's open skin knees. And I thought, why would it be any safer on him than in the chemical plant? Like, why would it be any better? It's not. And so that was my wake-up call. And I started reading every label I could get my hands on. And what I found was just incredible. Because I've been in food processing plants. I've been in water treatment plants. I've been in oil refineries and pharmaceutical companies, and like Bayer and Menon and Johnson & Johnson. I work for these people. And I see how these products are made. And once I started to see, oh my gosh, why are they putting that in there? It just was a total wake-up call, and I had to go on this quest to read every label I could and come up with, you know, some solutions. And so it took me 5 years or so to implement that in my life, you know, and to get to the point where I am pretty much 100% chemical-free now, except for when I, you know, walk outside and walk in the street and, you know, inhale things that come out of cars. But for the most part, I you know, what I can control, I have under control. So I guess I should just advance the slides and get started on my presentation. So what I want to talk to you about, number one, is understanding labels. Some of these things you guys are going to know already, but I'm going to go over it anyway because you won't understand the rest of the presentation if I don't. I'm going to talk to you about food ingredients. I'm going to talk to you about cosmetic ingredients and cleaning product ingredients, which I'm going to have a few surprises for you there. I have a few miscellaneous ingredients that I may or may not touch on, and then I got some resources for you. I'm going to skip over a lot of slides in this presentation, but that's why I gave you copies of the presentation, and I designed it so that you don't need me to read it to you. So there's a lot of slides in there that just say, you know, this chemical does this thing, and I certainly don't need to read that to you. You can learn to recognize that and look for it yourself. So when I skip over those, don't be alarmed because, you know, you have the information, but I want to do that, you know, in the, you know, because of time. Okay, so we're going to talk about understanding labels. Now this one is like my favorite thing to do, okay? I read every label that comes into my house. I go into supermarkets and read labels that I don't even use the products. okay, just because it's like a game. And when you read the FDA regs, like, doesn't everybody do that at night, you know, like light reading? Now, when you read the FDA regulations, it's like a maze. It's like this puzzle. It's like a game. Like if you don't know the rules to the game, you can't play it. It's hard. It's hard to play unless you've read the rules. And the FDA regulations are the rules that go along with this game we play. Only we don't all have access to them, or we don't know where to find them. Anyway, ingredients are listed in order of weight. Okay, so if it's listed first on the label, it's in there in the most weight, the highest quantity of it. So, you know, a lot of times water is listed first. A lot of times, unfortunately, sugar is listed first. Okay, so you can pretty much determine from there the first ingredient is in there in a higher quantity than the last ingredient that's listed in that order. But there's an exception. If they're in there at less than 2%, then you can list them in any order. So you can play around with that, and you can be deceptive. You could put something that's in there at, you know, 1.99%, and you can put it at the end and make people think that there's not that much in there. And I've seen that done with magnesium stearate a lot. But the other thing is that if it's under 2%, sometimes you have it's optional as to whether you have to put it on the label at all. So there are some things that could be in there at 1.99% that would be very beneficial for us to know. It was in there, okay. if something is listed in the nutritional facts, now I gotta tell you, I'm gonna try to use this pointer here, but everybody else has been having trouble with it. This is the nutritional facts up here. This is the ingredient list down here. Okay, if something is listed up there on the top, let's take, for example, folate. Let's say that, you know, something has folate in there, it's enriched with folate, and it says folate as folic acid. Well, if it's up there, thank you, if it's up there, then it does not have to be on the bottom, okay? Which is really, so if you're looking through your label and you're trying to find folic acid, which of course we're all going to do now that we heard yesterday's presentation, it could be omit it from the bottom as long as it says up top that it has folate as folic acid. So, you know, it depends whether you read both or not, okay? So that's one misleading thing. The other thing is that the nutritional facts apply to the specific serving size on the label, and I'm going to get into in a little while why that's important, okay? But if it says, you know, serving size is, you know, 1 cup, and your package has 5 cups in it, okay? Well, you know, you have to multiply all those numbers by 5, okay? So, and that's going to get important as we go along. Okay, so what is not on the label? There are a lot of things that are not on the label. Okay, my favorite is processing aids. Okay, we use that in engineering. We use processing aids to make things move faster, make equipment work better, make reactions go faster, make things cool down faster, turn things from acidic to alkaline or alkaline to acidic. There are all kinds of things that are added. I could go on for days about it, but as if it's a processing aid, if you can get it approved by FDA as a processing aid, you do not have to put it on the label. So then there could be all kinds of things in there, mostly acids and bases, but you know, it's important to understand what's in your food, and those do not have to be on there. Okay? Ingredients, I already said, if it's less than 2%, it's optional in a lot of cases. There are some things like pharmaceuticals that require less than 2%, but there are most of your foods you can get, you know, you can leave out if it's under 2%. Here's another one of my favorites, harmless markers. That's an actual term, harmless markers in the FDA reg. And companies are allowed to put these in. And there's a whole list of them that can go in there. And basically, a producer adds it to their food so they can identify their food. So that, like, if somebody's, like if there's a drug out and there's a knockoff on that drug or a supplement, it happens a lot in the supplement world where somebody copies the supplement and tries to sell it under somebody else's label. Well, companies are allowed to put these harmless markers in there so that when they test a substance that's under their label, they know whether or not it's theirs. There's very little regulation on that, on what's allowed to be approved as a harmless marker. So it's so ambiguous that it's very, very easy to get one approved. Okay, again, herbicides kill herbs, kill plants, pesticides kill bugs. Again, these things kill living things, we are living things, and we do not have to put that in there because a manufacturer is required to put on the label their raw materials as they come into the plant. So if corn comes into the plant, anything that was done to that corn before it crossed their border is not their problem. So they do not have to list any of that. Stabilizers is another thing that is not on the label, like you know, things that are put in your food that might be reactive. If it was stabilized before it came into the plant, then they don't have to include it. You know, sometimes like peroxide, you can get, it'll say stabilized, but in most cases, you don't have to put that on there. Okay, serving size. Here's where I'm gonna talk about serving size. This is my favorite subject. Okay, to get something approved by FDA, you've got to go through a lot of testing, okay? So you go through the testing. You try to be as compliant as possible because you can get your product approved faster if you do all the tests that are required. So you're testing for certain harmful substances that are in your product, okay? It might be a chlorinated chemical or a solvent or a catalyst that hasn't quite come out, whatever. You're given limits on what can be in your serving, okay? So, for example, with Splenda, it really is made from sugar, by the way. They start with, you can look up the patent, it starts with sugar, and they do all kinds of things to it, like chlorinate it. And in my mind, the molecule, the sucralose molecule, is very, very similar to a pesticide. And there is some rumor that they were trying to make a pesticide and somebody inadvertently tasted it. And I imagine that. And they found out that it tastes sweet. And they said, well, hey, maybe we should make a sweetener out of this. I don't know how true that is because the rumor says that the person was smoking a cigarette and they picked up their cigarette and tasted it. But I don't know of any laboratories that allow cigarette smoking lately. So I'm not going to trust that story. But anyway, it is very similar to a pesticide. So when that was being approved, of course, you can't have a lot of that in your body. It's going to be harmful. And so to meet the requirements of FDA, they had to keep going back and retesting and changing things, right? So how many people think that they would decrease the amount of the harmful chemical in order to get it to pass FDA regulations? All right? And how many people think they would decrease the serving size? Yes, they decreased the serving size, of course. And that is why Splenda is packaged with sugar, which I'll show you in a little bit, because the serving size had to be so small that they couldn't sell it. They couldn't make a package small enough for it, and it wouldn't flow. So they had to mix it with sugar. And I'll show you the label to prove that to you. Okay, calories. Okay, you're allowed to say that something has zero calories if it has less than 5 calories in it, okay? Now, if it has 4.99 calories, it's going to say 0 calories per serving, okay? But you're getting 4.99 calories. And again, same thing with the sucralose. You know, how many people have one serving? You know, or once, and this is per day, too. This is like an 8-hour period. These limits are for 8 hours. So how many people have one? Okay, no, nobody does. Okay. Fats and trans fats, less than 0.5 grams equals zero. All right, that's really scary because, you know, 0.499 grams of trans fats are a problem. And that's why you always look at the label and you see, you know, mono and diglycerides and you see partially hydrogenated soybean oil, but it says zero trans fats, okay, because it's a labeling loophole. It does have trans fats, it just doesn't have to show up. Okay? Same thing with sugars. This is really bad for diabetics who are trying to not, well, all of us, not even diabetics, just everybody who's trying to cut back on sugar. If it's less than 0.5 grams, it'll say zero sugar. And you're getting, you know, so those who are really sensitive, that's a problem. Okay, all natural. There is no FDA definition for all natural. You want to put that on your product, you can. Cyanide's all natural, okay? There's a lot of things that are all natural, and you can put it in there, and it doesn't matter because there's no definition of that. There's no, like organic, you have to have an organic certification. Again, there are loopholes to that, but for the most part, it's more likely that you will, you know, it will be organic. Okay, and then my other favorite, generally recognized as safe. We call it GRAS. There's a whole list of things that are generally recognized as safe. And if you look at that list, you would be amazed at how could it possibly have made that list. And my favorite on that list is propylene glycol. And that's why you will find propylene glycol in your food. You will find it in all of your personal care products, even some of the ones that are sold in health food stores that are supposed to be safe. Propylene glycol is antifreeze, in case anybody doesn't know what that is. I'm sorry if I'm using technical terms here, but yes, propylene glycol is basically an antifreeze. And I don't want it in my food. Okay, there's your label, Splenda. And if you can see right here, it says, first ingredient, dextrose. Okay, sucralose is what Splenda is. That's all the way at the end there. And there's maltodextrin in there, which is sometimes made of corn. There's a lot of ways to make maltodextrin. Okay. Minute Maid fruit punch, all natural, 100% natural. They even went further, okay? But look at the ingredients. Pure filtered water and high fructose corn syrup. Okay? There's a lot of things in there that are definitely not all natural, okay? There's even some sucralose in there. Okay, so hidden trans fat. Again, trans fat only has to be listed on the label if it's a triglyceride. So here's another loophole. Besides the fact that if it's less than 0.5, you don't have to list it, but if it's only if it's a triglyceride. So you could have mono and diglycerides in there that don't have to be labeled, okay? But they're still trans fats. And then there's other ingredients, this thing called datum, and I got to tell you what that is, and I'm trying to remember. It is diacetyl tartaric acid ester of mono and diglycerides, and it is a All right, I'm good. I just memorized that, though. Anyway, it's an emulsifier that is used in the bread industry, and it is used to strengthen the dough, okay? All right, food ingredients. So now I'm gonna skip over a lot of these because, again, we have time, but I'm telling you, there, you know, some of them link to brain cancer, blindness, and I looked these all up in, you know, my many chemical books. Also, my team and I, we are developing an ingredients database. And so far, we took a database of 65,000 products, and we looked at them for all the ingredients in them. So these are food products and personal care products. And then we took the 500 most frequently seen ingredients and put them in our database that actually, we got a little book that's going to be published soon, and I haven't decided on the title yet, but it's got the 500 most common ingredients and all this information about them. But then I took from that 500 list, I took the most common ones and put them on here. So if these things look like they're not very common as we get through it, you know, so these things obviously are common, but there's going to be some things that you're going to see that are not common, and you know, you're not used to seeing them, but trust me, they are on the top of the list if I put them in this presentation. Really important here, MSG, okay? These are the symptoms of MSG, which I'll let you read yourself. But I want you to see on this slide all the different ways that MSG can appear on a label. I mean, there are so many things. Okay, stock, broth, there's one, enzymes, okay? You can even put pectin in there and it could actually be MSG. It's just incredible. It's so hard to avoid this chemical. And I don't even know why, because it's not cheap. I don't know why everybody wants to add it. I guess it just makes your food addictive. And that's why everybody wants to put it in there. Okay, preservatives. Again, I'm going to let you read them. But this one's another one of my favorite. Sodium benzoate. There's a chemical reaction, and I'm going to have to look at the chemist in the room to tell me exactly how. But when sodium benzoate is in the presence of vitamin C, it makes benzene. Benzene is a known carcinogen. It's been a known carcinogen for years, and when you test soft drinks, like I believe Orange Crush is listed as having vitamin C in it, that creates benzene. And some sodas, depending on the shelf life, the longer they've been stored, the more benzene you find in them. Okay. What really scares me is the liquid vitamins that are preserved with sodium benzoate. So really look at that one, because that one's scary. Because benzene will cause cancer, and I really think there is no threshold limit. I think it, you know, any amount of benzene should be avoided. Okay, meat and dairy products, again, just look, that tells you what to look for. I'll let you read that. Okay, so now I'm in the last part of the presentation, the cosmetics and personal care. So I'm just going to give you a couple of pointers and rules of thumb, and then I'll let you read stuff on your own. The skin is the largest organ in the body. I know you've all heard that. Okay, what I tell my people, don't put anything on your skin that you are not willing to eat. And I'm serious. I mean, it doesn't have to taste good. It doesn't have to be tasty. But if you are not willing to put it in your mouth and swallow it, then don't put it on your skin, because it's going to go through faster. Okay? There's a field called industrial hygiene that a lot of us, you know, chemical safety people get into. And industrial hygienists, we talk about routes of exposure. Okay? So you can be exposed by eating something, by absorbing it through your skin, or by inhaling it, okay? And most of the time, with these hazardous chemicals, absorption through your skin is easier and faster than going through your digestive system. So if you're not willing to eat it, don't put it on your skin. Okay, there is an exception to that, and that is large molecule things like titanium dioxide and zinc oxide, because I do prefer them as a sunscreen, and they're large molecules, they reflect the sun, and they won't go through your skin barrier. They're too big, okay? So those are the only ones. Okay, my favorite resource is Environmental Working Group, okay? www.ewg.org. They have a database, a skin deep database. You can look up any product. Your client is using Pantene and they're not willing to give it up. You can look that up and it will give it a rating and tell you everything that's in there and what's bad about it and why they shouldn't use it. They also have a cleaning products database and a food database. And on my iPhone, I have the app on what fruits and vegetables have the most pesticides in them. And you can get that from Environmental Working Group also. Okay. Parabens, you've all heard about that. Those are definite hormone disruptors. And we have to avoid them, and they're mostly in your cosmetic products. Fragrance. There's no limit on fragrance, okay? It's an undisclosed mixture of things, okay? It's always proprietary. If you see fragrance, there is no way to know what it is. So even if something over here smells pretty and doesn't bother you, and this thing over here kind of smells similar, but it does, it's because it's somebody else's fragrance. It's a different company, and it's a different makeup, and they can put anything in there. And I don't know if anybody noticed, but last night when we left here, the chemical soup that we walked into because of that party down there, I mean, I felt like I was at a Fabergé convention or something. It was just like there was so much in the air. It was awful. Okay, so here's a bunch of other chemicals. Again, they don't look common, but they are. This one particular, okay, may contain impurities. All right, that's not a big deal. The second one, it enhances penetration of the skin. So if this stuff is in your body lotion, it's going to make things get absorbed faster. What if your body lotion also has benzene or something, or cyclohexane, or SLS or something? It's going to make it go in your skin faster. Okay. Formaldehyde releasing ingredients. Formaldehyde, I don't care. That's almost as bad as benzene, maybe worse. Anything that makes formaldehyde or uses formaldehyde, don't get near it. It's very bad. Okay, I'm going to skip through a lot of these because I really, really want you to see some other stuff that I have. All right, cleaning products. Cleaning products are not required to be labeled at all. Zero. You don't have to put anything on. Some of the companies are voluntarily putting, like Seventh Generation will put labels, and there are some others that are willing to put things on their labels. But again, if there's no rule, how do you know they're putting it all on there? You know, like they're saying, oh, we're being really stewards, and you know, we're gonna label it for you so you know what's in our product. But if there's no laws, then how do you know they're putting everything on it? You really don't. Okay. Again, there's a cleaning product database at EWG. Okay. I want to talk about chlorine. We talked about it earlier, that it is a displaces iodine, right? That's a major reason not to get exposed to chlorine, okay? Whether it's in the pool, in your cleaning products, in your water, I don't care. That's a major reason, but there's another reason, okay? Chlorine is very reactive. It reacts with anything organic. And I don't mean organic like your organic vegetables. I mean organic as in, like carbon is organic and concrete is inorganic, okay? So we are organic beings. We put chlorine into our body. There's any parts of us that could react with the chlorine, and it will cause trihalomethanes to be formed, THMs. And THMs are very carcinogenic. There's rules in the drinking water industry that you have to reduce THMs, but they don't reduce them to zero. And THMs are definitely bad for you and need to be avoided. So that's why we have to avoid chlorine. Okay, triclosan, antibacterial soaps, avoid anything that has triclosan. It's very bad. And besides all that, I think it also, the last one, is really important. It destroys your prebiotic or probiotic environment in your gut, all your good bacteria. All right, I'm going to skip through the miscellaneous, okay, because you can read those and make your decisions. Area resources, all right? So EWG.org is up there on the top. EPA.gov, all right, the EPA, has a lot of information. You got to sift through it. But they do have a lot of information about regulation and ways to dispose of things and all that I think is very interesting. And then my favorite is go to NIOSH, National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health. Okay, so that's what we use when we're trying to keep workers safe. Okay, but the information is the same for you guys. They'll send you free guides. You can download free guides on any chemical. All kinds of things that you can get, and it's like a wealth of information, and it's part of the CDC website. It's called /NIOSH, okay? And then, of course, there's my website. You can go there. I, again, am in the very beginning stages of this, so when you go to my website now, you'll find things, but, you know, over the next year, things are going to get better. But I do want to point you to this one race. This is my website, okay? This, let's see, this is me recently in the community. This is me when I was 22, okay? And I was kind of afraid to put that up there, but, you know, you get wiser when you get older, right? So it's okay. All right, so anyway, that's what my website looks like, and okay, two more words. If you click, that's more than two. If you click on the industry side, you'll get a bunch of stuff in chemical engineering, but if you click on the community side, it will take you to this page, which has my blog, and so, you know, you can look at some of the radio shows I've been interviewed on and stuff. Dr. Rita Marise is on there. And then right here, and it's circled on your handouts, is where if you enter your email address or send your clients to it, they can get my free ebook. And my free ebook is called The First Hour of the Day. And it just goes through all the things that you're exposed to in that first hour from when you wake up in the morning. And believe me, it says in there that it's over 165 chemicals, but that's where I stopped. It's so much more. So, you know, take a look at that ebook. And really, since I'm in the beginning of everything, you know, there's an email address on my website or just donna@chemconscious.com. But I'm really interested in what you think of. So when you read the ebook or you look at my website or even like what you heard from me today, I really want to know what people want to know. Okay? So thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thank you.
Oh, was that fun? Was that helpful? Good. Gives you lots of resources. I would highly encourage you download her stuff. And what's the book you're coming out with? And it's about the chemical. There's like a...
Yeah, well, I have two. I have one that is a ingredients database. And I think I'm going to call that hazard magnification. But it has a magnifying glass that comes with it. And you can take it to the supermarket and use the magnifying glass to read the labels. And then I have another one on home detox. It's a home... It's a whole home audit thing where you can go through your whole house and look for all the hazardous chemicals and figure out what to do with them.
Can I take questions?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm going to set up my presentation.
Okay.
What do you recommend for makeup?
I use mineral makeup. Mineral makeup it doesn't work as good, but it's reflective, and so it's weird. Like you look at yourself in a different light, and it's not so good. But there was a study on teenage girls. And this is the first study I have ever seen that had 100% positive results. They were testing them for parabens in their skin. And every single one of these middle school girls had parabens above the recommended limits. And it was from cosmetics, from makeup. So I highly recommend mineral makeup. And hair dye, peroxide's okay. So if you want to be a blonde, you're probably fine. If you don't burn yourself using it, it's not going to hurt you. But the dark hair dyes are a problem. So I use herbal hair dyes, which don't last as long, and you only have a choice of like three colors. But it's better than ending up with bladder cancer. So,
yeah, great. Okay, one more.
I have a question. My kids are competitive swimmers in high school.
Mm-hmm. That's a scary one. And here's what I do. I tell people to look at risk, okay? So if you're going to spend a lot of time in a chlorinated pool, okay, number one, shower immediately afterwards, okay? And then make sure there's no other chlorine exposure. Don't use any chlorine cleaning products in your house. Get the chlorine out of your water, especially out of your shower, because you're going to absorb more into your skin and breathe more in than you would even drinking. And then that way their exposures are minimized. It's not the best solution. The really best solution was to get all the chlorinated pools to be like, salt chlorinated or something, or salt disinfected. But
right.
But that's what I tell people. You can't get them out of the pool, but you can minimize their exposures.
Right. Oh, give that back there. I don't need it. Great stuff. Great stuff. And you mentioned, too, that you were going to do a module. I don't know how.
Oh, yes. I have offered in the detox module of the program that you guys are signing up for with Rita Marie. I am going to put a chemical labeling primer, a detox your home type of thing in there. So anybody that is getting the modules will get my home detox module.
Thank you.
Because you got to detox your environment if you're going to detox yourself, right?
It's the first thing you do for detox.
Yes.